It is Tuesday, November 16th. Welcome to episode 178 of Menace to Sports. I am Zach Smith, your host. Really excited about this episode. A lot to talk about. We're going to talk about kind of my thoughts on the Heisman Trophy, who I think is most deserving to be in the conversation. We're going to talk about the conference outlooks, what is the picture in the Big 12, the ACC, the SEC, and all of that. We're also going to rattle through all the big games from this past weekend and talk about 100 other things. But if you didn't catch the morning show this morning, we had some great conversation on there. Gave my Michigan State history, and I'm not going to repeat it because for loyal listeners, you listen to everything. But Michigan State has that, I don't know if you want to call it a rivalry, but that series with Ohio State has shaped Ohio State's program and is honestly kudos to Michigan State for being a big reason why Ohio State is where they are. And so go listen to that morning show and check it out because it's really interesting to think about how that matchup influenced the trajectory of Ohio State football. Also on there, I talked about newly announced, and I haven't even put it out publicly, but I always tell you guys on the show first. So obviously we're doing all this stuff for charity. We have a tailgate this weekend, Michigan State, check that out, Charging on Lane. We also are doing squares for charity. We did it for the Ohio State season. Now we're doing a postseason squares for charity. So $100 a square. It plays in all five conference championship games and all three playoff games. So eight chances to win. If you hit any score, at the worst you could do is get your money back. But like if you hit the final score of any of those eight games, you get $300. So you triple your money. So do that to help us support our charitable, I guess, endeavors. And we do everything with my grandfather's Earl and Jean Bruce Charitable Benefits Foundation, the charity. And within that now, because we're raising more money than, I just have donated a little bit as much as I could raise from a tailgate. But now we're doing more, trying to raise more. We want to make a greater impact in things other than Alzheimer's. So we're doing a number of things. The biggest thing that I announced on the morning show is the Zone 6 Fund. And that Zone 6 Fund is going to be this. It's going to be for kids that don't have the means but have a passion to be a great at football, and we're sticking to football for now. Hopefully it grows and we can do it all sports, but the fund is to improve the quality of youth sports and afford opportunities to kids in athletic development in Central Ohio. So we have +2 University on board, Eric Lichter, who is probably the best strength coach I've ever been around, and not even a strength coach, like elite performance developer. How about that? That should be his title. Trained LeBron James, Ted Ginn, private sector guy, was Jim Tressel's then head strength and conditioning coach. Just freak brilliant at development and tatted up, bearded up, my kind of fucking guy. But anyways, this fund will give athletes an opportunity to receive training from Coach E over at +2, also receive private coaching and kind of get a leg up, because the reality is this. Malik Harrison was a Columbus City school kid. He would have never been at Ohio State if it wasn't for Luke Fickell asking me to go watch him play basketball, and then I pounded the table for him, Luke pounded the table for him, and it was still a lot of apprehension about taking who would end up being a great player, high draft pick, because Columbus City League football is awful. And it's not necessarily on the coaches. I don't want to put it on them, but they don't have the resources. They don't have the time. They don't have the benefit of coaching these kids. So I want to bridge that gap. My goal is to have a kid that would have not went to college make it big time, go play at a big time university, graduate, get his degree, make it to the NFL, because that's one life changed. And if I can do that over and over again, that kind of will fulfill the whole reason why I got into coaching, was because I wanted to impact kids. And so I'm sitting here, I love what I'm doing right now, but I'm not going to not do that because that was my life passion. That's why I got into coaching. So we're going to do it a different way. So obviously, if you have any interest in being a part of it and donating or just, helping maybe throw a fundraiser, whatever, hit me up, Zach@menace2sports.com. We already have enough. We're going to sponsor one athlete. So if you have an athlete, please reach out and let me know who you think is deserving of a scholarship to train this winter and off season and, chase their dreams. That's the point of it. So I'm really excited about that. The Zone 6 Fund. And then I'm going to have to rattle through some of these, but the way we do that, the way we've raised money for that is the square board. So reach out or Venmo at Cameron Media for a square, $100 per square. You can buy as many as you want. And then our tailgate this weekend, Braxton Miller, myself, the Michigan State game, going to be big time. Last home game, come hang out with us, $50, all you can eat, 2 drink tickets. Benefits, obviously, Braxton's Foundation and everything I just talked about in a long-winded fashion. But anyways, we got to get back to some sports gambling. I actually got advice from our handicap team on tonight's game. So if you're listening to this, I hope you get it in. If not, stay tuned tomorrow morning. I'll give you tomorrow's plays. But from our handicapping team, from at Menace to Picks. Check them out on Twitter and social and Instagram through our partner, MyBookie. With our promo code Menace, you get a free deposit match, double deposit match. So you deposit $100, they give you $100. Go to mybookie.com to gamble, and I'm going to give you my plays tonight in some action. And so I'm going to tease it. I'm taking, so Eastern Michigan's +6. I'm going to tease it to +12, and I'm taking the Eastern Michigan, Western Michigan over 65, which will tease to 72. So I'm taking a teaser on the over and Eastern Michigan to cover +13 with a teaser. We actually put out our picks are Eastern Michigan +7 and over 65. So I feel like a tease is a lock. So go to MyBookie, sign up right now, put in $100, get a free $100, lock in a maxion play. And if you want a second play, the Penguins money line and Blues money line, an NHL parlay about even money. Check that out and go to MyBookie. It's easy to do. Really, really easy. I mean, and you literally could pause this show right now, go to MyBookie, sign up, put in your credit card or debit card, put $100 in your account, and they'll give you a free $100 right then and there. Lock in those two parlays, $50 each, and let's have us a day. I'm so excited about that. MyBookie is the place to go, and let's all win some money, man. But so we got that going on, right? Squares for charity, Menace to Picks, MyBookie, Tailgate, Zone 6 Fun, so much going on. That was 6 minutes and 20 seconds to intro this show, but enough about that. Let's get to the show. Ooh, wait, before I say that, we got a throwback intro for you. For those of you that have been OG listeners, longtime listeners, this is the throwback. And I'm telling you, I got pumped up when I decided to throw it on and I heard it. So let's get this throwback intro and let's get to the show.
What a hit, Denzel Ward. You got barbecue back there and you didn't invite me. Hurt my feelings.
You'll be pleased to know this is the last time I'm hosting. I don't care anymore. I'm joking. I never did.
Braxton Miller, loose spin move. Miller heading for the end zone.
You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world.
He'll run it after the 10, 15, 20. 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Lucky for me, the press can barely speak English.
But they are who we thought they were.
Whoa, he has trouble with the snap. And the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson. And he scores on the last play of the game.
Well, then get the fuck out of here, then. Okay, see ya.
I think that might be my favorite intro that we have had on here, and so I might need to make a new one because not that I didn't like our 2021 intro tune, but it didn't hit me the same as that one. So I want to throw it back on there considering it is Michigan State week. And like I said, this is the morning show because it's a huge week historically for Ohio State. And then you have the rivalry game. Then it's championship week. Then it is preparation for national championships, bowl games, college football playoffs, all of that. So to start with that, because, you know, it's hard to follow the whole landscape of college football, let's just talk about the outlooks of every conference, right? And the first one that we will kind of talk about, but Cincinnati is obviously on the outside looking in of the college football playoff rankings, but I think that can change, and I think it will change. And they need to handle their own business, starting with this weekend against SMU, probably their biggest test. Then they play ECU, and honestly, the game that I would be most worried about is that AAC championship against Houston. Houston's 9-1 right now. Their only loss was to Texas Tech all the way back in week one. So that's going to be a game now. Cincinnati does not have a cakewalk into this playoff, even if Bama loses and Oregon loses. They got to handle their own business. So watch out for Houston in the conference championship. You roll over to the ACC, you got 9-1 Wake Forest, probably going to play 8-2 Pitt. Unfortunate that Pitt is 8-2 with their quarterback play and the way they've been playing. They lost to an awful Miami team in Western Michigan. Like, do that math for me. The Big 12 is a mess, man. Oklahoma, Okie State, Baylor, all in the mix. Oklahoma State lost to Iowa State. That's their only loss right now, and we predicted it on the show they were going to. Otherwise, they'd be in the mix nationally. So Oklahoma, if they were to win their last two games, they're going to have to beat Oklahoma State twice and an Iowa State team this weekend that is not going to be an easy test. So I think Oklahoma loses another game, and the Big 12 is wide open. I don't even know who's going to play for that, let alone win it. The Big Ten, I think we all know Ohio State controls their own destiny. Michigan needs some help. Michigan needs Ohio State to beat Michigan State. And then they are riding into Indianapolis with a win over the Buckeyes in the rivalry game. Michigan State obviously beat Ohio State, and they just have to beat Penn State at home to go to Indy. So, you know, pretty clear the picture in the East. The West is, I mean, it's a shit show. Iowa looks like they should finish with only two losses, but the problem is they lost to Wisconsin. And they'll need Wisconsin to either lose to Nebraska at home or Minnesota away to make it. Minnesota's not out of this mix either. But it looks like it's probably going to be Wisconsin. Unless Minnesota can get it done after Thanksgiving, then Iowa will be in Indianapolis versus whoever comes out of the East. We just talked about it. That will be all decided here in the next 2 weeks. The SEC, Georgia's obviously in. Alabama would have to lose to both Arkansas at home and Auburn on the road to fall out of that matchup. So they would need to lose both. But the schedule leading into that Georgia game, I was looking at it, Bama has to play two ranked teams before they play Georgia, assuming they make it. They have to play Arkansas, Auburn, then Georgia. Georgia gets a cakewalk, man. They play Charleston Southern, Georgia Tech, and then presumably Alabama. Like, you talk about a setup game. Who's going to be fresher, Georgia or Alabama? Alabama's going to have a brutal three-game stretch. And honestly, if they win, if they are able to beat Georgia after that two-game stretch, they deserve to be number one. They really do. I just don't see how they do that. And I think they're going to get beat. You know, I can't say they're going to get beat by Arkansas or Auburn. They're not. But I think they get beat by Georgia for sure. And they are out of the mix. The Pac-12, Oregon looks like they're going to have to beat Utah twice this weekend and in the Pac-12 championship game. So I'm looking for them to lose one of those two games. I don't see how they go 2-0 against a pretty solid Utah team. And the team that no one's really talking about right now is Notre Dame. They absolutely are going to finish 11-1, barring some insanity. They get Georgia Tech at home at Stanford to finish the year. And the reality is, I'm of the opinion always, leave them out and make them join a conference. So you got to be a conference champ, or at least play in a conference to get in. Smaller schools, if you're interested, Conference USA, UTSA, RJ Young's crown jewel right now, look like they should finish the season, regular season 12-0, but then they're going to have to beat Western Kentucky again. They won 52-46 in week 5, and that will finish their perfect season and send RJ Young into retirement when they don't make the playoffs. The MACtion, if you've been watching that during the week, Northern Illinois is the king of the conference right now. One of only two teams with a winning record, by the way. Yikes. The Sun Belt's interesting right now because the App State should win out and play the Raging Cajuns of Louisiana, who will finish 9-0 in conference play in the West. And the second place team in the West is 3-7, by the way. So it's really a shit show. Also, before we continue, we care about the little guys. Shout out to the Sam Houston Bearcats, who are sitting 9-0 right now, about to finish 10-0 in FCS football, and going to try to make a run at their championship. So just want to shout them out. I didn't know Sam Houston was 9-0. Started doing some research. Thought they deserved a little love. So that is kind of the picture of, you know, the conference pictures nationally. So moving on from that, a lot of conversation about the Heisman Trophy, right? And looking at the odds, so the Vegas odds right now to win the Heisman Trophy, Bryce Young is plus 150, CJ Stroud is plus 300, Kenneth Walker III is plus 300, and then Matt Corral is plus 500. That's your top four. Probably the top three would be invited to New York City if Vegas is right. Other players of note, Kenny Pickett plus 2,000, quarterback from Pitt, Travion Henderson plus 3,000, and Caleb Williams plus 3,000, which is a joke, and I'll get to why it's a joke here in a minute. Travion Henderson and Caleb Williams have the same odds. Like, that's ridiculous. That just shows you how biased it is as a quarterback award. And Buckeye fans, of note, FanDuel actually has CJ Stroud as the favorite to win the Heisman right now over Bryce Young. CJ's plus 150, Bryce is plus 200. So when I started looking at it, I'm like, all right, we know the Heisman is a quarterback award, right? That's what it's been. That's what it has been, I don't know, for a long time now. The best quarterback is going to win the Heisman. Sometimes not even the best. The media narrative quarterback is going to win the Heisman. Right now, grade-wise from Pro Football Focus, the quarterback position, Kenny Pickett is the highest graded quarterback, the pick quarterback, in the country at 93%. Then Bryce Young, 92%. Sam Hartman at Wake, 91%. CJ Stroud at 90%. So that's the top four quarterbacks grade-wise. So then I'm like, all right, I don't trust Pro Football Focus for all of my data. I go to a couple different sites, and then I track my own and watch and study film. here's Bryce Young versus CJ Stroud, because I've been on this for I don't know how long that CJ Stroud and Bryce Young are of comparable performance. Basically, they are performing similarly. I don't think either is a Heisman Trophy winner. They don't belong in that conversation, but they are. It's the reality of the world we live in, I guess. So Bryce Young has two more touchdowns and two less interceptions than CJ Stroud, but he's also played an extra game and thrown it 50 more times, right? When it comes down to it, Bryce Young is a far better dual threat quarterback, right? He has scrambled 24 times. And getting to my criticism of CJ Stroud, CJ Stroud has scrambled 9 times this year, 9 in 9 games, an average of 1 scramble per game. In total, with sack adjustments, he has 14 rushes for 2.6 yards per carry, 59 total yards, right? That's scrambles and quarterback design runs, 14 on the year. For comparison, Justin Fields last year had 30 carries for 517 and 5 touchdowns, 8.2 yards per carry. 2019. So, all right, let's not even talk about Fields. We know he's dual threat, although CJ runs well. We just don't know that. Dwayne Haskins in 2018, 46 rushes for 144 yards and 4 touchdowns. He ran the ball 46 times. CJ's run it 14. I mean, he only averaged 1.9 yards per carry, but at least he fucking did it. He made defenses, kept them honest. And then in 2017, as the backup, he scrambled and ran for 20 times for 103 yards, 4.1 yards per carry. Shit. Mac Jones at Alabama, not an athlete. CJ Stroud's an athlete, not an athlete. Mac Jones at Alabama averaged 3 yards per carry in 2020, more than CJ Stroud. That is really that's the reason why Bryce Young will win the Heisman over CJ Stroud, if that's what it comes down to, right? Because you look at deep balls. CJ Stroud, 19 of 43, 44%, 10 touchdowns, 2 interceptions in one less game. Bryce Young, 37%. So, you know, 8% less than CJ. And he only has 8 touchdowns and 2 interceptions. So, 2 less touchdowns. So, check mark, CJ Stroud on deep balls. Now you go, my big thing is throws over 10 yards. CJ Stroud, 56%, 20 touchdowns and 5 picks. Bryce Young, 55%, 15 touchdowns and 2 picks. Now, this comes down to ask, how much are you asking them to do, right? Attempts per game over 10 yards. How many attempts is Ryan Day asking CJ Stroud to throw over 10 yards? 16 on average per game. Bryce Young, 12. Checkmark CJ Stroud. That's 2 analytics, right? Over half of Bryce Young's touchdowns have been throws under 10 yards. On the contrary, 2/3 of CJ Stroud's touchdowns are over 10 yards. So CJ's being asked to do more and performing similarly or in some ways better than Bryce Young, right? Under pressure, Bryce Young has been under pressure twice as much as CJ Stroud. Both are around 53-54% effective, but the difference is Bryce has scorched people scrambling. 14 touchdowns to 1 interception. CJ Stroud has done well. 5 touchdowns to 2 interceptions, right? When he's under pressure. So Bryce Young is getting more bang for his buck under pressure because he uses his feet. That's the difference. So when you talk about base defense versus blitz defense, right? Both CJ Stroud and Bryce Young have dominated teams when they bring some form or fashion of a blitz. Bryce Young, 66.7% for 17 touchdowns and 2 picks. CJ Stroud, 67.4% for 16 touchdowns and 1 pick. So it's a push. Maybe you give a slight edge to Bryce Young because when he's under pressure, he scrambles and gets so much more, right? He extends plays with his feet when he's under pressure. 14 touchdowns when he's been under pressure to 1 pick. CJ Stroud has 5 touchdowns because he doesn't run, right? So maybe you give the slight edge to Bryce Young. Third down, both have been outstanding. Alabama's number 1 in the country on third down offense. Ohio State's number 4, right? Negligible percentage difference. So that's a push. Red zone, it's where, you know, it's not entirely on the quarterback, but it is, right? When you're in the red zone, you're going to go for it on third down. You got to score. It's going to be a pass, right? 99% of the time in the red zone it is, right? So it's on the quarterback. Alabama's 6th in America in red zone offense, scoring touchdowns, 76% touchdowns. Ohio State is 42nd in America. So kind of, I mean, I know I'm a little biased, but I'll take CJ Stroud in almost all analytics outside of red zone, right? So Bryce Young's better in the red zone and runs around. If CJ Stroud would just commit not to being a running quarterback, just run when you need to. If he would, he would outplay Bryce Young across the board. But Bryce Young will win the Heisman Trophy. Make no mistake about it, because he's not afraid to run. He's not being a little fucking crybaby. And he actually will run the ball when he needs to. So that's the conversation between the two favorites to win the Heisman. Now let me tell you who should win it. Kenneth Walker III. Now what he needs is, he needs a win against Ohio State or just a dominant performance. He needs to go off against Ohio State, even if they lose. And then ideally he'll win a championship, right? Because we know Heisman Trophy voters love successful teams, right? So that brought me to my next point. We know Kenneth Walker III is a veteran guy, right? Played at Wake, transferred to Michigan State, grad transfer. He's an older guy, right? His counterpart in the Big Ten and his counterpart on Saturday, Travion Henderson, is a baby, right? True freshman. So it's hard to compare apples and oranges, but I'm going to try, right? Because Kenneth Walker's handling a grown man load, and Travion Henderson is not. It's more of a two-headed backfield with far more weapons on offense. So when you look at these two, right, the first thing I look for is how often do they score touchdowns? How many carries does it take for them to score a touchdown? Kenneth Walker III scores a touchdown every 13 times he carries the ball. Travion Henderson, every 10 times. So Travion Henderson scores touchdowns more frequently than Kenneth Walker, right? How about carries over 10 yards? One in every six carries for Kenneth Walker is a run over 10 yards. One in every five for Travion Henderson is over 10 yards. So check mark Travion, check mark Travion. Carries resulting in an explosive run, right? A run over 20 yards. Both of them, every 12 runs, have a run over 20 yards. That's wildly impressive. Now, Travion Henderson has more 30-plus yard runs, 8-7. 40-plus yard runs, 6-4. And the same number of 50-plus yard runs with four of them, with 61% as many carries as Kenneth Walker III. Listen to that again. He has a little over half as many carries, and he has more 30-plus yard runs, more 40-plus yard runs, and the same number of 50-plus yard runs. You talk about a home run hitter. Both of them have over half of their production on breakaway runs, over 15 yards. The reality is this. Travion Henderson is the better back. He's just younger, and Ohio State is not trying to make him a workhorse. The other reality is Travion Henderson is far more versatile. I mean, he has 223 yards receiving. Kenneth Walker III has 85 on four more catches, mind you. So Travion has been lighting it up in the pass game and run game. He's the better back. But the Heisman Trophy voters care about stats and the fact that Michigan State's pretty good this year and they were terrible last year. They like storylines. That's just the reality of it. So that is my Heisman Trophy, I guess, plight. My ploy to Heisman Trophy voters is please stop just listening to ESPN and looking at stats, because I can give you real analytics, not stats. Stats are like what you see in an article or what you see on ESPN, right? That's my premature, not as premature as some of these people that have been talking about the Heisman Trophy since preseason, honestly. Do you remember that? Spencer Rattler was the favorite to win the Heisman or something like what? What are we talking about right now? The guy's been benched twice and just was awful. So kudos to sports media. Spencer Rattler going to win the Heisman. Hope you all locked in your preseason bets, for Christ's sake. All right, let's move on to the weekend. Wild shit happened. How about Florida pulls off the huge win over Samford and danced in the locker room. And Dan Mullen popped his collar and danced in the locker room. I mean, how the fuck is Dan Mullen still the head coach at Florida? Listen to Samford. Samford had 25 missed tackles and still played Florida as well as they did. 530 total yards, 416 yards passing, 114 yards rushing. Florida was down 42-35 at half to Samford. How is Dan Mullen still coaching Florida? It's disrespectful to Gator Nation. It's disrespectful to my alma mater. It's disrespectful to the coaches that succeeded there and helped build that place. It's disrespectful to Steve Spurrier. It's disrespectful to Urban Meyer. It's disrespectful to every great player that has played there, that Dan Mullen is still walking into that office, sitting in the head coach's office, and representing the University of Florida as the head coach. Disrespectful. He needs to win one of his final two games in year four to become bowl eligible. This is Florida, the house that Spurrier built, right? Danny Werfel, Tim Tebow, Urban Meyer, Percy Harvin. I mean, I can keep going. unbelievable that this is going on in Gainesville. If you're a Florida fan, I would be outraged. I'm not supporting the team at all. No donations, not going to games. That crowd, when Florida State comes to town, should be dead empty unless Dan Mullen's fired. It's just pathetic. Anyways, also, other news. That wasn't an upset, but it kind of was. But Dan Mullen didn't think so. Go to Twitter and watch the video. He popped his collar and was dancing like a buffoon after coming back and beating Samford. All right, moving on. The Kansas Rock Chalk Jayhawks take down Steve Sarkisian in Texas. The 1-8 Kansas team takes down Texas in overtime on a two-point conversion. Do you think there's a clear culture issue at Texas? Watch what happens in Austin this offseason. The portal is going to be humming like a Transformers movie. the Infinity Stones are going to be out and people are just going to be disappearing, right? It's going to be insane. I mean, the moral of this game story was Texas had four turnovers, and that's how you lose. Simple as that. They're not a very good football team, and they gave it to Kansas four times. That's how you lose. But watch out what happens at Texas this offseason with the portal, with recruiting, with guys transferring in. It's going to be really interesting to see. And their counterpart, their SEC hand-in-hand travel partner, Oklahoma. Down goes Oklahoma. And what little credibility RJ Young had left is gone. But Caleb Williams, right? The man, the second Heisman Trophy candidate in the quarterback room in Norman, I was told by Oklahoma fans. They told me I was an idiot, that I didn't watch film. I was nothing but a wife beater. And how could I have? One of the guys thought I was a strength coach. He said, you can only evaluate strength and conditioning. I'm like, I actually can't evaluate that. I'm not very good at that. Caleb Williams, the man, right? Let's check in on how old Caleb Williams, the Heisman frontrunner candidate, freak show, best player ever, according to Boomer Sooner. How'd he do against the Baylor Bears 81st ranked pass defense? Let's check him out. Let's check in. 1 for 5 on deep balls, 20%. Well, that's fucking terrible. 1 for 7 on throws over 10 yards, 14%. That's awful. 17% completion percentage under pressure. Well, I tell you, that's it's not very productive, but I'll listen. He was 9 of 18 for 142 yards and 2 interceptions. Ah, but wait. He's dynamic with his feet, right? He grabbed the ball from the running back that one time and got a first down. He, as RJ Young said, he had patience on a zone play and made one guy miss and gained 9 yards. And RJ Young said, find me another quarterback in the country who can make this run. And I raised my hand. I'm like, half of them? Like, it wasn't that impressive. Let's see how he did in the ground game, right? Dynamic runner, like Mike Vick 2.0, right? 10 rushes for 17 yards. Well, for the mathematically challenged, that is 1.7 yards per carry. So it would take him over 5 downs to get a first down. He would need 6 downs to get a first down running the ball. The other one I got criticism for was saying Kennedy Brooks is not one of the best running backs in the country. 14 carries, 55 yards. Take that one to the bank. Oklahoma's defense, boy, back to life, back to reality. They were abysmal. Gary Bohannon, the quarterback of Baylor, just killed him. 3 touchdowns. He mainly killed him on the ground. Then Abram Smith went 20 for 148. As a team, Baylor averaged 6.3 yards per carry. This Oklahoma defense struggled. Alex Grinch's unit struggled. This team will lose at least one more game. Book it, bank it, take it to the bank, take it home. Wherever you take it, just know it's going to cash. And Kansas and Baylor just took down the newest members of the SEC. Kansas and Baylor. What is going on in Big 12 country? Man. Switching over to Big 10 country, Michigan beats Penn State as we told you they would because of 2 reasons. Michigan has a little bit better defense and Sean Clifford sucks under pressure. I thought I told you that it was going to happen. I thought I told you it was real. Michigan, 8 missed tackles. Penn State, 14 missed tackles. We could move on, but I don't want to. Sean Clifford under pressure. Let's see how he did. How did Sean Clifford do? 0 for 1 on deep balls. Really dominant down the field. He only threw it once and didn't hit. 4 of 13 over 10 yards. That's 31%. That's really, really shitty. And then my key stat to the game, an astounding 21% completion percentage when he was under pressure. They have one threat on offense. Penn State does. They can't run the ball. It's Jahan Dotson. That's all they got. 15 targets to Jahan Dotson. I mean, as I said, would happen. But he was only 1 for 5 on targets over 10 yards. Four of his actual catches were behind the line of scrimmage. This Penn State team is so limited because of Sean Clifford. So limited. They were awful on first and second down. Shit, Penn State had 21 third downs in the game. That's how bad they were running the ball and throwing the ball on first and second down. And then they only hit 33% of those. But here's what we did learn. I told you, we'd learn something. Penn State's a pretty good defense now. And Michigan, not that good of an offense. Sorry, Wolverine fans. Cade McNamara, just an average dude. 1 for 4 on deep balls. He only attempted 6 passes all day over 10 yards. And he was 2 for 6, 33%. 23 of his attempts were under 10 yards. This kid is not elite enough to beat Ohio State, I'm sorry, or play for a championship. He's better than quarterbacks they've had, but he's just not it. They also don't have a presence on the perimeter. They have one guy. They have one guy on offense, Hassan Haskins, that played in this game, right? Hassan Haskins. They threw it to their Hassan Haskins 5 times, Roman Wilson 5 times with 3 catches for 31 yards. He's a receiver. Cornelius Johnson, 3 catches, 51 yards. They threw it to their tight end, Eric All, 4 times. I mean, Hassan Haskins had 31 carries for 156 yards, 5 yards per carry, 5 catches for 45. He's their best offensive player. They're not that good on offense. Sorry. Sorry, Jimbo. Now, let me tell you who is really good. Aiden Hutchinson and David Ojabo. God, I can't say that name. I've tried all year. They are dominant. 12 quarterback pressures between the two, 5 sacks. I mean, they were on Sean Clifford, I mean, all day long. In all, Michigan had 34 QB pressures. I just wonder if they listened to the show, because that was the key, right? That will be a huge test for Ohio State in the rivalry game. Just mark that down. Ohio State will. That will be interesting to see how the tackles can block Aiden Hutchinson and David Ojabo. They are really, really, really good. All right, before we get to the Buckeyes and some of these other games that I broke down and want to discuss, I want to talk to you about one of our sponsors, BetterHelp. And I've talked about them on this show a number of times. Some have been paid ads, and some I put on because I just believe in this cause. And it's all about mental health. And it's about, so betterhelp.com/menace. First and foremost, you get 10% off of all their services using that code. But I want to tell you that if you deal with depression, stress, anxiety, I mean, who doesn't deal with stress? What are we talking about? Any family conflicts, grief, self-esteem issues, trauma, if you're going through adversity, please do me a favor. I started doing it and it has been a game changer for my mental health. I'm telling you, some of the stuff I'm doing right now, the morning shows, and I'm rocking it out because I'm talking to someone. So I'm challenging you right now, get your mental health in order. And even if it's strong, make it stronger. Work on it. Go to betterhelp.com/menace, get 10% off, and everything is confidential. Everything's on a secure Zoom line. I don't know if it's called Zoom, but it's on a secure line. And you can just sit there and talk to a counselor about whatever you need. They'll evaluate your needs, get you with who you need to get with, all licensed professionals. So I want you to start living a happier life today. As a listener, you'll get 10% off. Over 1 million people already have taken charge of their mental health using BetterHelp. So go to BetterHelp, HELP.com/menace, and get your life going, man. Improve it. That's all about self-improvement, self-work. So do me a favor and do that. I want you to press pause and go do that right now. All right, so I strongly encourage that. But let's talk about the Buckeyes in what was one of the most dominant games. Really, not, I take that back. The most complete game for the Ohio State offense to date. I mean, the offense was cooking with grease, with fire, with oil. You name it, they were cooking with it. They were cooking with Stroud oil. And I mean, they were phenomenal. The defense, not so much. Here's the positives. Let's start with the silver bullets. Let's just start there because we all know Aiden O'Connell looked like fucking Peyton Manning against this defense, but they had 8 missed tackles, right? So they played well, tackled well. David Bell didn't score a touchdown. That's a great thing. There's still 2 things that I saw that just made me furious because I'm a coach. I get pissed at coaches, not players. It's never the player's fault, right? The coach needs to teach the player and put the right player on the field. 2 things happened. They scored 2 touchdowns on idiot coaches, not players. The first one, they ran a 3-man bunch in the boundary, and they Ohio State clouded it. They played cover two. That means one guy, Ronnie Hickman, was a deep defender on that bunch. That works as long as only one guy goes deep. Well, Purdue sent all three. Like, what do you want him to do? He got three verticals out of an FSL bunch, and you played cloud, and the corner didn't play read cover two, nothing. He just sat in the flat. He had three vertical. Ronnie Hickman had to cover three people, and it was a wide open touchdown. Like, hello. I'm hoping that was a mischeck, but if Ohio State's going to play cloud into a three-man bunch in the boundary, watch out. It is going to be... This is going to be touchdown city. So just remember that. If you see another, that's my favorite part about talking about this stuff, is people will comment two games later when someone does it. They're like, man, Zach was just talking about that on his podcast, that they better not do that again. If you see a three-man bunch in a boundary and they do the same thing, expect the same result. The other one was a tight split in the red zone, and Marcus Williamson's lined up 3 yards off on the inside receiver. You know a pick play's coming. You're in the red zone. It's tight splits. So you either have to get off levels, Marcus Williams has got to back up and try to run over the top of a pick play, or the best thing to do is box it. First out, first in. Don't let them know you're doing it. That way you can pass it off, know where to throw the ball. It's a beautiful thing. It really is. Matt Barnes. Christ almighty, man. Somebody help these coaches out, or help them teach it. Either they're dumbasses and don't install it and don't have those adjustments, or they're not very good teachers. It's one of the two. But the corners got tested in this game. They really did it. Denzel Burke, granted, some of these are on soft zone coverage, but he dropped an interception. He got called for a BSPI with great coverage on David Bell. So he played well at times. He also got toasted on an overthrow that should have been a touchdown, so that's not in the stats. But it's very clear. I've said all along, right? Who are teams going to attack? Well, they're attacking the freshman. 14 targets. Cameron Brown had 4. Seven Banks had 4. So they went after old Denzel Burke. 9 catches, 62 yards, 5 first downs given up, right? Cameron Brown, 4 targets, only 2 catches for 13 yards. By far the best corner right now on the team. 7 Banks, 4 targets, 4 catches, 41 yards, a touchdown, and moved the chains 3 or 4 times. Probably the worst corner that is playing right now. And then Marcus Williamson in the slot. 9 targets, 9 catches, 69 yards, and a touchdown. We just talked about that touchdown. That wasn't on him, and I mean, other than the fact if he didn't back up and play off levels like he's supposed to. But honestly, I think the bright spot of the secondary is Lathan Ransom had his best game of the year, finally. But the starting corners, bad day. 31 targets, 26 catches, 84% completion percentage, 185 yards, 2 touchdowns. Not good at all. And good God, Bryson Shaw. I heard Ryan Day's comments. He's playing really well. And let's be fair. We'll find the middle ground, right? He's playing really, really well outside of 5 plays a game. The problem are those 5 plays are brutal. Like he's playing a post safety, a hot safety, right? It's a blitz and he's a post safety. And he's staring in the backfield and doesn't get depth. And so the guy runs down the seam for a wide open touchdown. Like, come on, man. I understand if you don't make a play, but don't make bonehead plays. Man, Cody Simon looks confused. Shouldn't be on the field in my opinion. I know they don't really have anyone else, but Cody Simon and Tommy Eichenberg are the weakest link of this defense. Tommy Eichenberg should absolutely not be on the field. He just gets blocked. He doesn't cover his guy in man. He can't defeat blocks. He's not a good tackler. Like, he is too young, not ready yet. Get him off the field, Al Washington. And I'll tell you this, Aiden O'Connell, whoo, that's a bad man. Why wasn't he starting all year? Purdue might be in the mix for something. He was masterful. You know he's masterful at? Getting the ball out of his hands. The pass pro was great, but he got the ball out. You could see Larry Johnson and his guys getting frustrated because of how quickly he got rid of the ball. I don't think I've ever seen a game, especially with 52 pass attempts, where there was only one quarterback pressure. He got pressured once by Tyreek Smith the entire game. He was outstanding. So start with the bad, end with the good, right? How about the OSU offense? First of all, red zone, hello, touchdown city, about time. 4 of 6 trips in the red zone, touchdowns. They're getting there. They ran the ball well. They had some nice concepts I like. C.J. Stroud was better, but I'm just telling you, C.J. Stroud's got to run the ball eventually. I think the biggest thing after watching Saturday and then seeing the Biletnikoff Award list released is, how in the hell is Garrett Wilson not a finalist for the Biletnikoff? That's criminal. It really is. Not only do I think he's the most deserving on this team, not to take anything away from Chris Olave, I think this should be like the LSU year where Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson were up for the award. It should. You can't tell me there's 10 guys on the list? You mean to tell me Garrett Wilson's not in the top 10 receivers in the country? Man, get the fuck out of here. You don't know anything about receivers then. So I'm going to do, I mentioned on the morning show, a Menace Award, and I might even go out and spend money on some bronze awards and mail them out because they're going to name people who are the best players at respective positions, a bunch of people that don't know what they're talking about. But Garrett Wilson was ridiculous in this game. Ridiculous. And I could read you the stats, but you know the stats. Now, what he doesn't need to do, he needs to calm the hell down with that one hand handing the ball, that palming the ball. I would never allow that with a receiver, ever, ever, ever. Having one time in 15 years, Jalen Marshall did it, and he got chewed out. Garrett Wilson did it, I think, three times in this game. That's going to hurt him. If he wants to palm a ball like that because he thinks he's in open field, someone's just going to slap that ball, and it's going to hurt the team. That shit's never acceptable. Offensive line, outstanding game. Only two quarterback pressures the whole game. Outstanding. C.J. Stroud was on fire. Now, he had an advantageous game plan. They didn't ask him to do much down the field, but also he didn't have to. I mean, what are we talking about? He was killing them. Killing him on intermediate throws. C.J. Stroud was 1-for-3 downfield. Didn't really have to take many shots. Was 55% over 10 yards. You'd like him to be a little higher, but 32 of his attempts were under 10 yards. So they're giving him, you know, throws to build confidence, throws to move the ball. Let those athletes catch the ball at 8 yards and turn it into 20-yard gains. Let them do it. Travion Henderson, outstanding. Mayan Williams is one of the best, you know, second punch in a 1-2 punch tandem to the electric Hendo. He was really, really good, the little bowling ball. Receivers, we got a shout out when they're doing well, right? I was critical on them for drops and blocking, and they've been catching the ball much better and are much improved blocking. So a lot of development going on in zone six and on offense. So obviously huge win, dominant win, especially offensively. Defense really got to get some things cleaned up. Good news is, not a lot of great passing teams left coming. I mean, Michigan State will launch it downfield. Cade McNamara is not a huge threat. And then if they make the playoffs, Georgia, I mean, they're okay throwing the ball. They're mainly a run rushing offense. If you talk about dynamic facets of the game and really defense, Alabama is probably the biggest threat for that. Jameson Williams might have a field day with this secondary, but we'll get there when we get there. But of note, speaking of those teams, if these games were to be played today, Vegas would set the spreads like this. OSU would be -6.5 at Michigan. They would be -10 in the Big Ten championship game versus Wisconsin. In the playoffs, they would be -11.5 if they played Cincinnati. If they played Bama, Ohio State would be +3. And if they played Georgia, the vaunted Georgia Bulldogs, OSU would open right now as a +7 dog to Georgia. So that is of note, I guess. Moving to Georgia, obviously my prediction was wrong, and I'm going to give myself a little free pass on this one in a minute, but let me tell you this. Georgia's the real deal. I mean, the real deal. They had 7 missed tackles. Tennessee had 11. And after the championship games, we're going to do a deep dive into this defense scheme, player by player, because it's one of the best defenses I've seen in a while. Certainly over 5 years, but just wow. Wow, are they good. The team is. Tennessee was the biggest test that Georgia's had all year offensively. They have. They just are horrible on defense. And that was my issue. I called my shot because I'm an offensive coach, and come to find out, Tennessee's defense is worse than I thought. I mean, Tennessee had 387 total yards, the most all year by any teams, 332 yards passing, by far the most against this Georgia team. The most unimpressive thing was the amount of pressure Georgia got on Hendon Hooker. Granted, they got home a lot when they did get pressure, and this is how you can't be a stat chaser, right? They pressured him. When they pressured him, they sacked him, right? I mean, they had 23 QB pressures, which is low considering we just talked about what Michigan did to Sean Clifford. That's low. I thought they would pressure Hendon Hooker more. I thought they would get home more. So not dominant pass rushers, but when they did get loose, man, they got him on the ground. Tennessee was never going to run the ball in Georgia's front seven, like ever. 1.5 yards per carry. And honestly, the quarterback runs are what killed Tennessee's run game. Hendon Hooker averaged 0.4 yards per carry. But you look at this Georgia defense, N'Kobe Dean, monster. Channing Tindall, freak show. Nolan Smith, explosive, dominant, vocal. The guy that really got exposed in this game, though, Darion Kendrick, the former Clemson corner. He got eaten up. They targeted him 11 times, 8 catches, 165 yards, and 1 touchdown. And it's getting clear as the season goes on that teams are avoiding Kelee Ringo, their other corner. They choose to attack Kendrick and the safety, Lewis Cine, because those two alone, Lewis and Kendrick, gave up 238 of the 332 yards in the pass game. So they have a weakness now. They have Achilles heel. You want to play out of attack? There it is. Find a way to muster up some form and fashion of a run game and then attack those two in the pass game. And then go full out to stop this Georgia run game and attack Stetson Bennett. That's what it is. You look at their offense, their run game and O-line were just dominating Tennessee up front. I mean, James Cook, over 10 yards a carry, 2 touchdowns. Kenny McIntosh added a score. The trio, Kenny McIntosh, South Florida kid, Zamir White and James Cook, they're very good, very good. Stetson Bennett impressed me. I'm not going to lie. He impressed me. Now, he didn't throw it down the field much, twice down the field, 1 for 2. He was pretty good over 10 yards, 6 for 9. Didn't throw it over 10 yards a lot, but 67% is outstanding over 10 yards. The issue was this. Tennessee couldn't pressure him, and they didn't blitz him enough. I don't know why. He was carving Tennessee up in base defense. When Tennessee didn't blitz, he completed 81% of his passes for 170 of his 210 yards. When they did blitz, he was horrible. 3 for 12, 25%, 3.4 yards per attempt. I mean, that is the key to stopping this Georgia offense. Not that there's some vaunted thing to stop, but stuff the run game. That's what their bread and butter is. And then blitz his tits off. Blitz Stetson Bennett's tits off. This Georgia team is beatable. They can be thrown on. Maybe the right O-line and running back combo could run it on them somewhat efficiently, effectively, let's say. Ohio State, if they implore something other than outside zone, they might have a chance to run it on this defense. The upset call was clearly premature. Blame the fact that I'm an offensive guy and think UGA is a beatable, very beatable on offense, and I knew Tennessee could successfully attack this defense. I knew it, and they did, with Hendon Hooker through the air, but they didn't have the defense to even stay in the game. So I was wrong. You got me. I jumped the gun, got a little too excited. I apologize, but that was the weekend of college football. Looking forward to previewing one of the last two regular season weekends. In the country, as this playoff picture becomes clear, we're going to get some playoff rankings tonight. I predict the top four will remain the same. Don't really care about anything else because I got a good idea who's going to make it in the end. But come hang out with us, man. Saturday, Michigan State tailgate, Point on Lane, Braxton Miller, myself. If you need a square, Venmo at Cameron Media. Shoot me an email, Zach@Menace2Sports. We'll get you on the board. Help me raise some money to support Alzheimer's research, youth sports in Central Ohio. Really trying to be a difference maker. Change the game, as they say. So thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. As always, I appreciate you. Hope you enjoyed the show. Hope you're entertained. We will catch you tomorrow morning on the Menace Morning. And I got a new intro tune for that show. So we'll catch you in the morning. Hope you enjoyed the show today. And if you didn't, go fuck yourself, San Diego.
What a hit, Denzel Ward. You got barbecue back there and you didn't invite me. Hurt my feelings.
You'll be pleased to know this is the last time I'm hosting. I don't care anymore. I'm joking. I never did.
Braxton Miller, blue spin move. Miller heading for the end zone.
You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world.
He'll run it after the 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Lucky for me, the press can barely speak English.
But they are who we thought they were.
Whoa, he has trouble with the snap, and the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson, and he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
Well, then get the fuck out of here, then. Okay, see ya.